editor of a magazine devoted to political satire. Apart from the daily routine, Fuchs at once turned his attention to the history of the field. They resulted in the illustrated studies on the year 1848 in caricature and about the political affairs of Lola Montes. In contrast to the history books illustrated by living artists, such as Wilhelm Bloß's popular book on the Revolution with pictures by Jeutsch, these were the first historical works illustrated with documentary pictures. Encouraged by Harden, Fuchs even advertised the work on Lola Montez in Die Zukunft and did not forget to mention that it represented merely a part of a comprehensive work which he was going to devote to the character of the European peoples. The studies of this work profited from a 10-month prison sentence, which he had to serve for lese majeste, through the press. The idea seemed obviously auspicious. A certain Hans Krämer, who already possessed some experience in the production of illustrated almanacs, approached Fuchs with the news that he, Krämer, had already been working on a history of caricature and suggested that they combine their studies and collaborate on the work. Krämer's contributions, however, were awaited in vain. Soon it became evident that the whole and quite considerable workload rested on Fuchs. The name of the presumptive collaborator was estimated from the title of the second edition. Also, it had appeared in the first, but Fuchs had given the first convincing proof of his stamina and his control of his material. The long series of his major works had begun. Footnote 6. Text. Page 230. Fuchs's beginnings came at a time in which, as Die Neue Zeit once put it, the trunk of the Social Democratic Party produced ring after ring of organic growth. Footnote 7. Text. With this growth, new tastes in the educational work of the party came to the fore. The greater the masses of workers that joined the party, the less the party could afford to be content with their merely political and scientific enlightenment, that is, with a vulgarization of the theory of surplus value and the theory of evolution. The party had to direct its attention to the inclusion of historical material in both its lecture programs and in the feuilleton section of the party press. Thus, the problem of the popularization of science arose in its full dimension. It was not solved, nor was it even possible to approach a solution as long as those to be educated were considered a public rather than a class. Footnote 8. Text. If the educational effort had been directed toward the class, it would not have lost its close touch with the scientific tasks of historical materialism. The historical material turned by the plow of Marxist dialectics would have become a soil capable of giving life to the seed which the present planted in it. That, however, did not occur. The Social Democrats opposed their own slogan, Knowledge is Power, to the slogan Work and Education, under which Schulz, delicious, pious, piously loyal union operated their workers' education. But the Social Democrats did not perceive the double meaning of their own slogan. They believed that the same knowledge which secured the domination of the proletariat by the bourgeoisie would enable the proletariat to free itself from this domination. But in reality, a form of knowledge without access to practice in which could teach the proletariat nothing about its situation was of no danger to its oppressors. This was particularly the case with the humanities. The humanities represented a kind of knowledge far removed from economics and consequently untouched by the transformation of economics. The humanities were satisfied to stimulate, to offer diversion, or to be interesting. history is disembodied while cultural history is preserved. Here, Fuchs's work has its place. Its greatness lies in its reaction to this state of affairs. Its problematic lies in its participation in it. From the very beginning, Fuchs made it a principle to direct himself toward a mass readership. Footnote 9, text. Only a few recognize then how much truly dependent on the materialist educational effort. The hopes, and still more importantly, the fears of those few were expressed in a debate whose traces can be found in the Neue Zeit. The most important of these is an essay by Korn entitled Proletariat and Classicism. Page 231. These essays deal with the concept of heritage, Erbe, as concept which has again become important today. According to Korn, LaSalle saw German idealism as a heritage to which the working class acceded. Marx and Engels understood the matter differently, however. They did not derive the social priority of the working class as a heritage, but rather from the decisive position of the working class in the production process. How can possession be spoken of, even spiritual possession, with respect to a class parvenu such as the modern proletariat? Every hour, every day, this proletariat demonstrates its right by means of labor process, which continuously reproduces the whole cultural apparatus. Thus, for Marx and Engels, the showpiece of LaSalle's educational ideal, namely speculative philosophy, was not a tabernacle, and both felt more and more drawn toward natural science. Indeed, for a class whose essence is its functioning, natural science may be called science per se, while for the ruling and possessing class, everything that is historical compromises the given form of their ideology. In fact, history represents for consciousness the same category of possession which capital represents for economics in terms of the domination over past labor. Footnote 10, text. This is a significant criticism of historicism. The reference to natural science, however, as science per se, first permits a clear view of the dangerous problematic of the educational question. Since Babel, the prestige of natural science dominated the debate. Babel's main work, Woman Under Socialism, had reached a circulation of 200,000 copies in the 30 years which passed between its first publication in Korn's essay. Babel's high regard for natural science rests not only on the calculable accuracy of its results, but above all on its practical usefulness. Footnote 11, text. Somewhat later, the natural sciences occupy a similar position in Engels' thinking when he believes he has refuted Kant's phenomenalism by pointing to technology which through its achievements show that we do recognize things in themselves. Natural science, which for Korn appears as science per se, makes this possible particularly as the foundation of technology. Technology, however, is obviously not a pure scientific fact. It is at the same time a historical fact. As such, it forces an examination of the attempt positivistic and undialectical separation between the natural sciences and the humanities. The questions which humanity brings to nature are in part conditioned by the level of production. This is the point at which positivism fails. Positivism was only able to see the progress of natural science in the development of technology, but failed to recognize the concomitant retrogression of society. Page 232. Positivism overlooked the fact that the development was decisively conditioned by capitalism. By the same token, the positivists among the social democratic theorists fail to understand that the increasingly more urgent act which would bring the proletariat into possession of this technology was rendered more and more precarious because of this development. They misunderstood the destructive side of this development because they were alienated from the destructive side of the dialectics. A prognosis was due but failed to materialize. That failure concluded a process characteristic of the past century. The miscarried reception of technology. It consists of a series of energetic, constantly renewed efforts, all attempting to overcome the fact that technology serves this society only by producing commodities. At the beginning, there were the Saint Simonians with their industrial poetry. They are followed by the realism of a Duchamp, who sees the locomotive as the saint of the future. Finally, there is a Ludwig Pfau. "It is quite unnecessary to become an angel," he wrote, "since a locomotive is worth more than the nicest pair of wings." Footnote 12, text. This image of technology comes from the Gartenlaube. This may cause one to ask whether the Gemütlichkeit which the 19th century bourgeoisie enjoyed does not arise from the hollow comfort of never having to experience how the productive forces had to develop under their hands. This experience has really reserved for the following century. The present century experiences how the speed of traffic, machines, and the capacity of apparatuses for duplicating words and writing outstrip human needs. The energies which technology develops beyond this threshold are destructive. First of all, they advance the technology of war in its propagandistic preparation. One might say of this development, which are thoroughly class conditioned, that it occurred behind the backs of the last century. That century was not yet conscious of the destructive energies of technology. This is especially true for the Social Democrats at the turn of the century. If they occasionally criticized and opposed the illusions of positivism, they remained largely trapped by them. For them, the past appeared to have been gathered up and stored forever in the sheds of the present. Also, the future held the promise of work ahead. It also held the certitude of a blessed harvest. Fuchs educated himself in this epoch, and decisive aspects of this work derive from it. Expressed simply, his work participates in that problematic which is inseparable from cultural history. This problematic leads back to the quotation from Engels. Page 233. One could believe this quotation to be the locus classicus which defines historical materialism as history of culture. Is this not the true meaning of the passage? Would it not be true that the study of individual disciplines, once the illusion, shine, of unity has been removed, flows together in the study of cultural history as the inventory which humanity has preserved to the present day? In truth, to pose the question in this manner is to replace the varied and problematic unities which cultural history embraces as history of literature and art or history of law and religion, merely by a new and most problematic unity of all. Cultural history presents its contents by means of contrast. Yet for the historical materialist, this contrast is illusory and is conjured up by false consciousness. Footnote 13, text. He thus confronts with its reservations. Such reservations would be justified by the mere inspection of that which has existed. Whatever the historical materialist would survey in art or science has a lineage which cannot be contemplated without dread. the products of art and science owe their existence not merely to the effort of the great geniuses that created them, but also to the unnamed drudgery of their contemporaries. There is no document of culture which is not at the same time a document of barbarism. No culture